Man, welcome to a special episode of the Bukari Sellers podcast. Today we have my brother. I actually grew up on him. He's not that old, but I did grow up watching Psych all the time.
All right.
Absolutely love it. But Dulé Hill, what's going on, my brother? How are you?
Everything is cool, man. Glad to be here, brother.
How's your family doing, man? I don't, you know, I need to start asking people, checking in better on these shows. How's your family doing? Everybody good?
Everyone's doing good. You know, Jasmine, you know, she's doing wonderful. She just had her book, which just came out this week, The Most Perfect You, which is a lovely children's book, showing children about self-acceptance and love. And also for the parents who read the children, or the adults who read the children to the book, read the book to the children, that they are perfect in every way as well. My daughter, Kennedy, who is 17, turning 18 in a few months, is off to Northwestern.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, volleyball over there. And I'm just so proud of the young woman that she's growing up to be. She's graduating in a month, and she is just a shining bright light. And of course,
did she get her car already? Or are you getting her car for this graduation?
She got a car from last year, because out here she starts driving from young, 16. But we got her a car last year.
Well, we got to think of something, a good graduation gift. But tell her her lawyer is still working for her, so I'll make sure that we get it negotiated.
All right,
good
deal. All right now. And then Levi's doing great. He's 3 years old, and he's just, you know, he's running the house.
That's great.
Speaking of lawyers, he is the great negotiator. This cat will talk you down off of anything. He goes, you know, but let's see, Dad. Let's see. Or let's think about it, Dad. Well, no, you can't have a milkshake. Let's think about it, Dad. Let's think about it. We'll see.
My three-year-old today, she's obsessed with, I'm like, do you want to go to the park? She says, no, Saturday. Do you want to make a juice? No, Saturday. She doesn't know when Saturday is, but she knows she's building out her calendar for
that's
Saturday.
That's the day. I'm busy the rest of the week, Dad. Saturday is my day.
Look, we start each one of our shows by having our guests walk us through the arc of their careers. And you've been in the business for some time. Talk us through your first big break in acting. And at what point in your life did you realize that this was something you could actually do for a living and be great at it?
Those are two different markers, really. My first big break was at the age of 9 going into 10. I ended up booking this show called The Tap Dance Kid. I was going to dance school in East Orange, New Jersey, at a dance school called Marie Wilde School of Dance. The show The Tap Dance Kid came looking for kids who can sing and dance. I auditioned, and next thing I know, I was there in the workshop for the show with Savion Glover, our friend Hassan Tatum, now the late Hassan Tatum. And that was the journey of the start of all of our careers. First, Savion went down to be in the show, and then I went, Hassan went next to understudy him, and then I went to understudy Savion. And then a few months later, I left and did the lead role of the Tap Dance Kid on the national tour with Hinton Battle and with Harold Nicholas of the Nicholas Brothers. I did that for about a year, and that really was my introduction into show business and this idea of being on stage, playing make-believe, and doing something that you love to do. That was the first big break. The next big break, I would say, there was a few steps along the way. I ended up doing a movie called Sugar Hill, my senior year of high school, where I played young Romello, who Romello was Wesley Snipes. So that was me really starting to step into this whole world. And I got a chance to see what it was to be a major actor at a close level just by being around Wesley. And then right on the heels of that, I got in my junior year, or really my sophomore into junior year of college, Savion came calling again, looking for, not calling again, but Savion called me looking for an additional dancer for the show that he was working on called Bring the Noise, Bring the Funk. We got together, and then, you know, we did it at the Public Theater, and then we went to Broadway. And it was at this crossroads that I really had to start making a decision about what I wanted to do with my life. Because I was really going to Seton Hall University to get a business finance degree. I had intended on going off to be a corporate lawyer. Scheduling was causing a lot of challenge between being in the arts and performing and getting my degree at the time. Because it's a long story, but this one teacher really wasn't trying to be of help to me. And really, in the end, the professor told me, you have to decide, do you want to get a degree or do you want to be in show business? I thought that was a wrong answer to tell someone who was trying to do both things, but it did challenge me to ask that question. And it was at that point that I decided that I really wanted to, it was at that point that I realized I could make a career out of this. I think I have the skill enough or the gift, the talent to make some type of career out of this thing, living my life as an artist. So I left Seton Hall and I enrolled in acting class at William Esper Studios in New York while I was doing Bring It Always, Bring the Funk. And I did that for 2 years. And then from there, I really embarked on the journey of being an actor.
Let me ask you this question. Do you, and it's funny because I've had a few actors on the show and I asked this question and they all kind of had the same response, but do you appreciate the stage more or do you appreciate the screen more? And most people say the screen, the checks are bigger, but the stage, at least you get some, you get the immediate gratification.
Gratification. My ideal career is to be able to jump around, to be able to do the stage, do some television, and then do film, then go back to the stage. What I love about the stage is you have to do it. There is no filter. You have to do it then, do it now, and nobody cares what you did yesterday. Nobody cares what you're going to do tomorrow. It's right now. And you have to stay open because anything can happen in live theater. And you have to just go with the flow.
Trust me, I've seen clips from that new Jesse Williams stage play. My wife talking about, I'm taking a girl's trip to see Jesse's play. I was like, you don't even like Broadway like that. I clicked on Twitter and I was like, oh, okay. I'm gonna go be.
Like, she's like, what are you talking about? I love Broadway. I love theater.
I have passes. I have a year pass.
You know what I mean? I'm a member of the guild. You know what I mean?
So how about this? Indulge me a little bit more here. What do you have to see in a script or role before you take it? And are there any scripts that you said no to that you saw blow up later and regretted turning it down?
Ooh. For the second question, I don't think that I've had a bona fide chance to do a script, a role that I said, I passed on that. And then it's blown up. I mean, careers are different, but I'm like, it's not like I said, didn't have all of these offers coming my way all the time where I'm just bobbing and weaving offers. You know, there are sometimes that I'm interested in pursuing the role and other times that I'm not. So I don't really have a script that I say, oh yeah, now I had a chance to do that. And I said, no. At least not as of yet. Hopefully at some point down the line, we'll circle back and I'll say, you know what? Makari, that role did come to me and hopefully I'd have the wisdom not to pass
it. Not to pass on it, yeah, exactly.
You know, and what was the first question?
The first question is what do you have to see? What do you have to see? What do you look for in something that you want to do?
You know, oftentimes I hope that it's, I try to play characters that have intellect in whatever they do. You know, I've played characters in The West Wing. I've played a pharmaceutical rep. I also played a gangster in this movie called Slight. But they all had intellect. They all were very smart in how they maneuvered themselves. I look for that. And then in terms of, obviously I'm a Black man, so I want to make sure that the whole story is being told. I don't mind playing a character that has a negative disposition as long as there is other aspects that are being shown throughout the story. If I'm the only Black dude and I have all of these bad attributes, then you know what? No, I'm not going to sit here and play this game with you all. But the main thing that I look forward to is intellect. I look towards conflict, that there's some type of balancing act that the character is trying to navigate, because I think that's what we often do in life.
Yeah.
And then am I telling a story that is reflective of some part of society or some part of people's lives?
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from sports exploration and green energy to delivering pizza and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over 2 decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action. by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
Let's talk about Wonder Years. I was a fan of the original show. You know, everybody watched it with their grandmama, whomever it was. Was there pressure in taking up a show that has such a dedicated fan base and following like the Wonder Years?
I think anytime you revisit something, then there is that pressure to not mess it up. But I also trusted that in the hands of Saladin Patterson, it would be handled with care and handled dynamically. There would be something interesting, an interesting point of view that he would take on it. When I understood that it was being set in Alabama and it was based off of his childhood, and then in the time frame, that's the, you know, the birthplace of the civil rights movement.
Yeah.
There's a lot of story to tell there. And being that Saladin is from Alabama and he's very connected to that story, I thought that it could be something very interesting and dynamic to tell. So is there pressure? Yes. But I think also it's like, as long as you give your all to something and you're really everyone is challenging themselves to be their best creative selves and do justice to the story, then all will be well. There's always pressure in everything that you do. Anytime you get on stage, there's pressure to tell a good story. So, and look, there's going to be some people that would never like something that you revisit.
Correct. They always say leave well enough alone or whatever it may be.
Right. But I think there's also a lot of people that can, especially with this show, why I was so interested in doing it. I love the idea of expanding the lens.
Oh, that was my next question, because like the big difference that you notice is that the Wonder Years and the original was that the primary family in the original Wonder Years was white, right? Mm-hmm. And how much different does a black family coming of age in the 60s in the Deep South make this current iteration of the show? And how have fans of the original Wonder Years responded to this current version that you're starring in?
I think a lot of fans, at least from what I've received, is they were skeptical at first because of their affinity for the original. But when they've given it a chance, they have fallen in love with the show. And they're so thankful, like grateful that they've gone on the journey, and grateful that we are even doing the journey, because nostalgia isn't just owned by one particular group of people. Nostalgia can be different for different groups of people, but it still exists. Yeah. And I often say with the African-American families or black families in the late 1960s, it wasn't all dogs and water hoses. That was a part of what was going on at the time.
Correct.
But it still was moments of love, moments of laughter, moments of BSing, talking trash and having marital conflicts and trying to raise your kids and going to work and trying to build a life for your family. And I think that, I think it's important to be able to tell that story, to show the audience that the original version is not the only version out there. That's not the only Wonder Years that exists. There's a Wonder Years for black families. There's a Wonder Years for Latin families.
Yeah.
There's a Wonder Years for Asian families. And all of these stories are true American stories. All these stories are the Wonder Years for these American families. I think there's something powerful in telling that. Like, people have asked the question, why not just do your own thing? Well, that's a whole conversation about taking something that you didn't originate.
Exactly.
And expanding, you know what I'm saying? What I'm saying? But I do think that because of the idea of the Wonder Years, there is something powerful to it, expanding that lens and showing that their Wonder Years exist for many different types of people in this country at that time and this time.
Tell me about your character, Bill Williams. Who was he in the show, and what was it about that character that jumped out at you when you first read about him?
Bill Williams is the patriarch of the family. He's the father of the Williams family. I love the idea how this person is passionate about his family and passionate about his craft. He is an artist at heart, a musician, but also he wants to be there for his family in every way. So he's made choices to put his music on a back burner to provide for his family. He's also a professor. He took on this job once so that he can give some stability to his family. And what I love about playing the character is, one, showing the Black father being there meant a lot to me. And not being there now in 2020, but showing that we've always been there. The fact that it's set in 1968, and this is a man who loves his wife, loves his children, and is going to, and still the coolest cat that I know. And it's a, and it was, and being cool doing it. I love the idea of putting that image out there, because oftentimes in this day and age, we're not shown in that way. But also Bill Williams is not somebody who is unique. Like, it's like,
oh yeah.
I think when people see the show, they're like, oh no, oh, I know who that guy is. I know who that guy is, because that guy existed. He still exists now. And he will exist tomorrow too. But oftentimes we don't put that out there enough. And that's why I just want to, I guess, play my part in putting that image and telling that story to the masses.
You know, most people don't know, we started this conversation before we started this tape conversation. We were having a conversation just about black fatherhood. So I appreciate that. I mean, carrying that portion of you onto screen is very valuable. This is also a period piece set against the story backdrop of Montgomery, Alabama. How much did you research into that area and into Montgomery to prepare for this role?
I did as much research as I could. I mean, thankfully with the digital age, I'm able to go online. Google Montgomery about the time period. I watched as many documentaries I could to really dive into what was really going on at the time. When we were in, I was already in Atlanta when I did the pilot, because my wife was doing a show out there at the time. I went to tour by Dr. King's house, see where some of the things that was happening. Go look at the, right before we started the series, I went to the Civil Rights Museum that's out there, just to take my time to try to get into the space of what was really going on. And that's mainly what I was doing, is just trying to ingest as much information as I could as to what was happening. When we did get a chance to actually film in Alabama, in Montgomery, because it's always a growth process.
So wait a minute, were y'all actually in Alabama, or did y'all film on like a set in LA that looked like Alabama?
We filmed in Atlanta, and then we took a trip to Alabama to actually shoot on location. And the thing about what I love about television is that it's always a process. You know, when you do a play, once you've done the work, you've done all your homework, you put the play up, now you're doing it. When you do a film, there's a beginning and an end. So you prep for it. Once you've wrapped the character, that's it. Television, the character is always growing and always evolving. So even though we were already in this series, when we shot in Montgomery, I toured so many of the civil rights places, historical places. I visited as many churches as I could, the ones that were open still and the ones that were not. I went to different homes that I could. It never dawned on me, being in Montgomery, that right where Rosa Parks got on the bus is right down the street from where the Greyhound bus station was. It's right across the circle was the building where the telegram was sent to start the Civil War. In that pit, right from there now, is where they used to sell slaves. It's like all of that really, and right at the street, and right at the, like, and even until you're
you,
there.
You begin to think about the people who walk those steps, the same steps you're walking.
Yes. Oh, I thought about that. Because even from where Rosa Parks got on the bus, right down the block is Ebenezer Baptist Church. And right down the block from all on this one street is the state capitol where, you know, where the governor was. And it never, in all of the stuff that I've seen and read and watched about that time period, I didn't realize how close everything was, that it was all happening all right here. And I did think about that as what you were saying, when I just walked the streets and I realized that, oh, the boat used to come there. They would take the slaves from underneath this street. And now it's a water fountain, but down there is where they used to sell my ancestors, people who look like me. It was very powerful to me, the fact that we were now back in Montgomery, Alabama, doing a show on television created by somebody from Alabama about Alabama and, you know, Black people in Alabama. I said, you know, a lot of blood, a lot of tears, a lot of struggle has had to happen on these streets. And look where we are now. Like, we are doing this when they say, you know, you do, we stand on the shoulders.
Yeah.
Like, we are real, like, we're not just doing this show just because, oh, it's a TV show and it's a fun story to tell. No, we are doing this show because of you, and we're telling the story because of you, and we're going to give our all because you gave your all. The least that we can do is give our all right now. And hopefully, you know, we just play our part in this journey, because in my mind, the race that I'm running is 1,000 times easier than the race that you've run. You know what I mean? And I can only run this race because you were in this pit, and you came from this pit, and now we're here. You got on this bus, and now we are here. You marched on these streets, and now we are here. There's something very touching and inspiring to me about that.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear. Especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA. I make calls. I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it. You can work out in it. You can go outside. You can go shopping down your local wherever. And you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons. This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client. This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from sports exploration and green energy to delivering pizza and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one.
Look, I'm going to get you out of here. I know you got to run around and do all of these other things, but you've been on some amazing sitcoms and iconic sitcoms, and network television is getting harder and harder. Mm-hmm. What are must-haves for any good sitcom to last?
Ooh. I mean,
you've been on something that have been around for a long time.
Well, here's the thing. Here's what I will say. I've been on television shows, you know, like the situation comedies is an aspect that I don't really know as much, because that's like the, you know,
television shows.
Television shows.
We use them interchangeably.
You know what I'm saying?
Wait a minute. Sitcom means something? No, we do know. Situational comedies.
Comedies, right. I think every show needs to have conflict. I think it needs to have engaging characters that you root for. I think in every, say if you're dealing with a comedy, there needs to be somebody who is the sane one, who is
like Psych.
Right. You know, but even in the Wonder Years, there's always somebody who's making rational sense and somebody who's a little bit off in what they're doing. You know, the last episode of the Wonder Years, EJ throws a party at home. Dean throws a party in the house. And of course, as parents, we're coming home like, are you crazy? What in the world? And the show was way more grounded than a comedy like Psych, but he still was doing something ridiculous. And then you have these other characters who are looking at him like he's crazy. And I think that is always a way for the audience to relate, instead of, because there's somebody who's a voice of reason or has some type of rational sense to them. But I think, I often say those are some simple tenets of what is needed to have a good show, but it's always like lightning striking in a bottle.
Yeah.
Because I always say, if I knew exactly what would make a good television show, I'd be way more successful than I am. I'd be way more wealthier. I'd be, I would have some island somewhere, and I don't.
Well, so we hope that the Wonder Years gets a season two. I haven't seen the announcement. Has it coming? Can you break news? What we doing?
I wish I could break news. I mean, you know, my phone hasn't rang yet. I'm assuming that in the next day or two, there will be something. Yeah. I'm expecting us to have the pickup.
Yeah, I think so.
I'd be shocked if we didn't. You know, yeah, hopefully by the time this gets to air, then it'll be old news that we got picked up.
For sure. Talk about this. Are there any other shows or anything else that you're working on? What do you have to look forward to? And where can people follow you on social media?
On social media, it's easy. At Dule Hill. I keep it very simple. It's D-U-L-E-H-I-L-L. Very easy. In terms of what's next, I'm getting my daughter off the university, and I'm looking forward to starting the next season of The Wonder Years, which I'm trust is happening soon. And then, yeah, that's the only thing that I had that's actually solidified. I mean, Wonder Years isn't solidified yet, but you know what I'm saying. And then we'll see what's next. I always stay open to what tomorrow brings. People often ask me, what is the favorite job you've ever done? I always say, my next one.
Well, I'm going to pray for you, brother, because you got a special type of anxiety going on. You got a young lady going off to Chicago to grow into being an amazing woman at Northwestern. And then you got a 3-year-old. So you got this whole special type. I will tell you, we got a 16-year-old. She just left to go to volleyball practice. She wants to go. She plays volleyball. She wants to go to North Carolina to play volleyball. Uh-huh. And then we got these 3-year-old twins. And what was next for me back then was a vasectomy. So I said, no more. We are good.
You see, you can relate though, because you're pretty much right there. You know, 16 and 3, 17 and 3.
And this is great. The 16 gives me more anxiety. The 17, I don't know, than the 3-year-olds. The 3-year-olds, it's just like, you know, fall down, get up. These young ladies got a whole different set of problems.
Yeah, and they're going, you know, they're right on the verge of stepping into adulthood and going off to becoming women, and it's...
But social media? Dude, if we had social media, I mean, it would have been... We wouldn't be here.
You see what I'm saying? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I probably need to have one of these days connect your daughter with my daughter, because being that she plays volleyball, too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Kennedy knows, you know, Kennedy's been... She just finished up all the club stuff, and her team just won back-to-back championships.
I think I saw the images with it. But anyway, let's close the show out. Thank you for joining the Macari Sellers podcast.
Yeah, of course.